And then invariably, whatever you'd say, that was supposed to be your career. So if you wanted to fix old cars, then you're supposed to be an auto mechanic.
So what did you say?
I never had an answer. I guess that's why I'm working at Initech.
No, you're working at Initech because that question is bullshit to begin with. If everyone listened to her, there'd be no janitors because no one would clean up if they had $1 million.
If I had $1 million. If I had $1 million.
Talking about millions of dollars.
What would you do if you had $1 million?
I'll tell you what I'd do, man. Two chicks at the same time, man.
We're living in a material world and I am a material girl. Or boy.
Well, what about you now? What would you do?
Besides two chicks at the same time?
Well, yeah.
Nothing.
Nothing, huh?
I would relax. I would sit on my ass all day. I would do nothing.
Well, you don't need $1 million to do nothing, man. Take a look at my cousin. He's broke, don't do.
If I had $1 million. If I had $1 million.
Hello, welcome back to Snacks and Jacks. I'm Tom Howell. Andrew on the board on this nice cold day in Chicago. It's not bitterly cold, and it's not all that windy, but it's not exactly pleasant. It's 10 degrees, which is a hell of a lot better than minus 20, but it's not as good as positive 30 either, so there you go. No matter which way you want it, Andrew, it's one way or the other. It's not, what, in the words of Roseanne Adana, if it's not one thing, it's another. Speaking of which, do we have Mr. O'Neill? If it's not one thing, it's another.
I'm the natural segue from Roseanne Adana. That's pretty cool.
God, what an amazing talent we lost there.
Absolutely. Gilda Radner was so funny in so many ways. Hey, we also have Mike on board, so.
We do.
Yeah, we do.
Well, good for him, and we have to talk about all kinds of stuff. We got the CPI coming out today. I'm getting so, why do I know that the numbers already leaked like the one yesterday did? But that's just, you know, it's just the way things are these days, I guess. Maybe.
Yeah, what did we get yesterday? I was kind of
PPI.
Other occupied yesterday. So
we got the PPI, which came in a little better than expected. But the thing was, where are we? We're Wednesday, and on Monday we were down really, really low. And then we came flying back the other way and came back almost unchanged on the close. I mean, we were really down. Of course, we've been down a few days in a row. So now we're trying to figure out what we're doing with these numbers. But the interesting part yesterday is, even though the number was better, we really only got a little bit of down move in the 10 and 30 year rate, and that to me is what kind of is what's driving stuff here. And you know, the politics and the, you know, God knows what's flying around the world, but Andrew, you don't need the card, the door's open. We're trying to go get coffee here, but we have issues with the building, all kinds of stuff. Anyway, yesterday I went through those numbers. I don't know if you guys were listening, but it's stunning that we have the dollar that has made this 3% and 4% move over a 6 or 7 week period. And if regular people, I mean, you know, if anybody's never been to Europe back when every time you seem like every time you cross the line you had to go change currencies. I will freely admit, I took a class in, Mike, you'll love this, I took a class in international economics in a business school, and we had all kinds of, University of Chicago had all kinds of people from, from France, there were a lot of people in the business program, and I'm going through this stuff, we didn't have anything like this at Notre Dame, I don't think, if there was a course we didn't take it, or I didn't take it, and these guys knew all this stuff. You know, this happens to this currency, what happens here, and what happens to this bank and that bank. I'm sitting there. I was so far behind after 4 weeks. These guys knew this crap like it was born to them. Because that's all, you know, because every time you cross the street, you have to change.
You know, when you have those really large cone-shaped heads with all the extra room for brains, they can soak it all up.
Well, you know what? Every other course, I think I did pretty well. But this one, it took a while. I mean, in the U.S., especially in the middle of the U.S., which we all are or were, and you know, before Mike started globetrotting with the Army, the dollar was the dollar in your pocket. You never thought that when the price of oil went up, that actually was somebody pumping more dollars into the system. You never even dreamed like that, because the dollar was your rock. It was America. I mean, nobody'd screw with the dollar, much less Americans, right? But fact is, we do. And when you see this kind of a currency thing, imagine if you were some firm. Well, if you're in the U.S. now, you're fat and happy. And if you're buying, the example I always use is my stepfather's firm. They were Hallmark rings and Waltham watches. Those are. I think Hallmark's probably still around. I don't know if Waltham is. But they would buy all their movements from Switzerland, meaning the inside of the watch. And right two blocks away from here, over on, not Canal Street, one of the streets over, Des Plaines, they had a building, a low-rise office building. It was actually their factory, where they had big rooms there where people assembled the watches. Now, you didn't have, you know, welding machines or anything. People just by hand assembled, took the movements.
Craftsmanship.
Yeah, it was just great. They put it in there. So, you know, you had 25 people assembling watches. And but they had to buy the movements. So but the movements got delivered. And go figure, a lot of watches are sold before Christmas, right? Duh. So they would sit, they would take delivery of the movements, say, in August. Well, they knew they were putting their catalogs together now, right, for next year. But you had to know how much you were going to price the stuff, and you had to know how much your movements were. But you had to buy the stuff in Swiss francs. I mean, it's a little bit of a lesson here, but just kind of a reminder what this even means. So if you were to, right now, if they were to just say, okay, we're going to price our watches at $100 and the movement costs us 30, you know, costs us 25 to put it together, and by the way, we're going to, you know, it costs us 55 and we're going to sell it for 100. Okay, well, now, if they just let it ride and the dollar goes up another 3%, they just made 3% on the deal, because to convert, because they get a price from the people in Switzerland in Swiss francs. So it's a two-stage transaction. You're not just buying the watches, you're converting to their currency. So now all of a sudden it costs you 3% or 4% less in dollars to buy the same amount of Swiss francs. You're going to have a really good year. But what if it goes the other way? You know, a 3% move or 4% move in a short period of time can totally bury a business. Because a lot of businesses don't have more than 10, 15, 20%, if that,
margin. Yeah, a lot of businesses' margins are very tight. So, yeah. You erode that by a couple of percentage points, and it hurts.
I mean, if you're importing Mercedes-Benzes right now, I think you're probably pretty fat and happy. But now, if you want to, now a lot of times, especially if you owe money to a bank, the bank's going to say, no, wait a minute, you can't take that risk. If you're going to price sort of like Kellogg's and the farmer regarding corn, you do the futures transaction, so you lock in your price, to at least to a certain extent. Well, exchanges have never been all that good at putting the having the exchange traded foreign funds, even though they all have contracts. Most of the money is still done through banks, because banks love that business, because they can essentially screw their own clients. Because they make if you're a client of the bank, they make it do it through your bank, all right? So you're going to go to J.P. Morgan, if that's what you're doing in your banking, and you say, I need to buy $2 million worth of Swiss francs in August. And they're going to sell you the forward contract. So whatever you made on the by the currency moving in your direction, you essentially lost on a forward contract, which is the same thing as a futures contract, except it's with an individual bank and not with an exchange. So if you were to turn around and say, for instance, if Mike were to say, I'm going to sell my corn at this price as a farmer, okay, and all of a sudden he makes a bunch of money on that, he could turn around and buy it back, okay? Now he doesn't have a position, because in the futures markets there's a clearing corp. Your position is not with the person who you sold it to or bought it from; it's with the clearing corp. That's the beauty of the stock market, options market, and there's no contraparty risk. But now if it's your bank and you want to go get a contract the other way, and you go to another bank, you're essentially long the Swiss francs, J.P. Morgan, you're short them over Chase. You still have two positions that are open. So it gets much more complicated. Is that too much information?
It's not too much information. It's kind of hard to digest for radio, though, so we should move on. I have some questions, so totally different subject.
Right.
And I have some questions for the two of you guys. So the first one is... fill in the blank here, federal COVID funds that were distributed to states should be used for?
Should be used for COVID, but they're going to be used for whatever they damn well please.
And federal funds that were distributed to the states several years ago and have for COVID and haven't been used should be?
Returned, but they never will be.
Yeah. And yesterday, Wisconsin Governor Tony Evers signed an executive order creating the Office of Violence Prevention. He is using leftover COVID funds to pay for it.
Yeah.
And we wonder why our budget is so effed up.
Let me ask you this, though. What sort of mess would you be in if you tried to return money to the federal government? Where the hell would you even send it?
Maybe you could send it to the office that issued it to you. I mean, that would be a novel idea.
But they, you know what, Mike? That makes total sense to guys like us. Do you think if we got $3 million to do a new Rock Island station or Burlington Northern station, and somehow or another one of us ran the thing and we only spent $2 million on it, where the hell would we send? Can you imagine the problem it would be to try and send that $200,000 check back to somebody?
Oh, it shouldn't be that difficult. Maybe the federal government ought to issue money saying if it's not used for this certain purpose, then it can't be used, and we will take it back.
Dr. J's bro Pete was on a. Where the hell was he? He wasn't in Hinsdale. He was Western Springs or something. They got money to do a redo of the railroad station, and then they decided. Was like a 2 or 3 year deal before it was approved, right? Well, in the middle of the approval process, somebody said, you know what? This alternative plan not only looks a hell of a lot nicer, it's about 10% cheaper. The guy who was in charge of going to, who was in charge of somehow getting to Washington and doing all you have to do to get it in the mix, was the look on his face, it said the color just drained from the guy's face. You're going to do what? You're going to tell these guys that you're going to save and start this process all over? And what are you, out of your mind? You're right. Why should you be able to call somebody and say, here's plan B. By the way, we wanted $2.5 million. Now we only need 2.2. You would think everybody would be happy.
One would
think.
Yeah.
Would you not vote for the person that does that? I would campaign for the person who does that.
How do you... campaign for somebody who's going to get rid of the bureaucracy. It doesn't seem to happen.
Bureaucracies don't give way very easily.
Did you ever see...
They're like cockroaches. They're really, really ugly, and they're really hard to kill.
You know what I haven't seen for a while? Maybe you guys have in your various states. Whenever there was a... they're putting a new something on the expressway or a new... even redoing it. They used to have a big sign up there that would say this money is from, and they would name all the different bills and where all the money was coming from. Remember those? I haven't seen one of those in a decade. Can you imagine trying to get in there and redo one of those applications?
Well, I mean, it just, you have me a little bit flabbergasted, Tom, you know. The last time I saw those signs was under Obama, and who knows where that money went. You know, all the highway renovation and whatever else he claimed he was doing. So,
but they would tell you if you wanted to look up the bills, you could. If you were some kind of a, I don't know why you would do this in your spare time, you could just go by there, write down the names of the bills, and I suppose you could go look them up somewhere and find out who else got money and how much you actually got from each and every bill. I don't know. They don't even want to tell. Of course, nobody cares. It's probably they don't tell you. But the how all that money comes for this stuff is so diverse. It could be coming from six different spots. It's crazy. But, you know, Kevin's right. What's so dumb about if you didn't spend it all sending it back? But that would seem to make sense, wouldn't it?
No, it does make sense. But, unfortunately, I guess it doesn't happen.
When's the last time the military...
Way too much sense to do.
When was the last time the military sent money back?
Oh, I don't know, Tom. That actually came up in, I think it kind of indirectly came up in Hegseth's testimony yesterday. So,
when I was a janitor, I became a custodian. Custodian sounds so much better, doesn't it? In the Chicago schools, I see the engineer filling out his stuff, his order for all the mops and the varnish and the, you know, all the stuff you need to run the place. And I go, why do we need two or three more of those big, huge buckets, you know, mop buckets with the ringers and all that stuff? Because if I don't fill this budget up to the top, even if we don't need it, first thing you're going to do is cut it. Duh.
Well, and that's the same thing we did at various offices that I worked at. You couldn't go lower than your budget from the previous year. So.
No, I mean, it's just rather than fight it, you just do it. It just keeps growing, right?
Yeah, that's true. It does keep growing. Yep.
What do you guys make of the fact that... Carl was just, we were just starting because it just came out actually after the show, regarding the budget. So, well, I have two questions. One is, it seems like our budget deficit is 40% higher than last year in the first 3 months of the year. Now, it's only 3 months, but still, it's a quarter.
Well, that's the Inflation Reduction Act, you know? Who knows?
And if everybody's doing so good, how come both corporate and individual receipts are less? You would think that's one you couldn't cheat on, don't you think? If you're working, you don't even send the money. They do. They send it for you, right? To the government. If we're doing decent, how could it be down? It's not down as much because we caught up a bunch last month, but still. So this year we're already...
Because, Tom, while you see a lot of stock market reports of the, you know, the well-known companies, and some of them are reporting really healthy profits and so on, as you get down the economy and you're getting to family-owned businesses, S-corporations, and even, you know, small distribution and manufacturing companies and so on, they aren't doing as well. And that's, you know, and that's going to cut into your receipts, and, you know, that's more companies. It's you know, large volume, small numbers.
Yeah, it's I mean, is this something that's going to be, and I talk all the time, more than I should probably, about the last time.
That's definitely true.
Yeah. Well, about how when there's only been one time in our history, and you can see these charts around, and once in a while when the listener sends me one, that we have the greatest amount of wealth is in the hands of the fewest people now than any time except 1929. And if that doesn't scare people, it should probably, or at least give you pause. Can it keep going like that, Kevin? Can the big firms just keep pushing? Can the Home Depots of the world, because they have such a footprint, can they just keep pushing? Even if people don't have the dough, they just keep... If the prices go up, they keep raising them a little more. I mean, it's you know, the Netflix of the world and the Apples and those people seem to, they just keep moseying along. And
you know how price elasticity works. You know, it's always within a range where, you know, it's elastic within a range. Yes, there are prices that get too high for people to do anything. There's even prices that are too high for people to do anything until it's an emergency now.
Oh, I would agree with that.
I'm not putting the roof on. I'll just climb up there and replace a few shingles. And if it gets really bad, then I suppose I'll call the roofer, but I'm not going to do it now.
I think you see it in car repair, for sure.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But I guess...
I'll just keep changing the oil.
I guess the question is, because I used to go to a lot of economics classes with our friend Mr. Mike here. Mike, if you get to that size... Can you always, if you have such a geographical footprint, can you always stay ahead of the game? In other words, if the price of nails goes up 3%, can Home Depot, if they wanted to, always raise them 4%? Because the cost of somebody getting in their car and driving 30 miles to buy the nails cheaper just isn't worth it.
Tom, it's a great question, and I don't know. I can't... I guess people sometimes are being forced into paying more than what they wanted to. It's just what Kevin said. Well, medical bills, for instance, you know, and Krauthammer used to bring this up, you know, something's got to be done with the medical profession and services, because, you know, it's taking up, what, 20% of our economy at this point. And, you know, we're not... paying 20% of our wages or whatever for medical. I mean, Medicare, I'd have to look up what we're paying. I'm working on taxes now. I'm pretty sure, well, I'm at $4,000 and then a little over $4,000. You know, and I make substantially more than that. So 4% of my income is only going to medical expenses. And I get probably, I don't know, $10,000 worth of treatment a year. Who knows?
Well, there's an awful lot of people that go the other way. I mean, right? I mean, if you're If you have a bunch of prescription drugs and you're in Social Security, you could be 50% of your income.
That's very true, yeah, because prescription drugs are so expensive. So.
Well, what I'm going to say, I just, you know, once in a while, I talk to people. One of my friends has, well, just count it up. He's on Social Security, and he's making $2,400 a month. Okay, well, out of actually, it should be $2,600 a month, but it's like $180 now comes out for your Part B, correct?
That's correct, yeah, 182. Yeah. Well, it depends on your income, too, I think.
But, okay, I don't know about that. But anyway, say 180. Well, he's got one of the F plans for the supplemental, that's like 280. All right, so we're up to, where are we? We're 380, 460. And the Part D for the prescription is another $80. So he's $540 a month in insurance times 12. Is a real number,
right? So $6,000 or whatever, roughly, yeah. $6,000.
And then, so what is that of his income? And that's assuming that plus if he gets prescriptions, it's out of pocket, right?
My prescription is very little out of pocket.
But so. You've got the Army stuff.
Yeah, but yeah. Tom, I earned that.
I know. I'm not. What I'm saying is the full cost. Somebody's paying a bunch for that stuff. Somebody is.
That's correct. Well, if it's generic drugs, it might not be a bunch. You know, well, who knows?
God help you if you're on like blood thinners or something. But you know, my point is that we get somehow diluted because we're not paying it. Somebody's not paying it. I mean, Kenny last week, I would never have said so without him doing it himself. He's had some treatments for cancer. I think he's doing pretty good. And it's $50,000 a treatment.
Right. Well, it's end of life stuff, and should we be doing that? Who knows?
But,
you know,
Kenny's
60. Yeah, and as Carl said in an email exchange yesterday, until we understand the cost and fix the cost, nothing's going to be okay anyway. And there is absolutely no reason why a treatment like that should cost $50,000, because the marginal cost of it sure as hell ain't $50,000. And so now we're debating over whether the fully loaded cost A is that high, and B is it justifiable in its own merits, I guess is the best way to say that.
Well, the example I think we probably could or should use, because it's right out there, is the young lady wrote the article for CNBC. What's the name of the fatso drug? There's a couple of them, but what's the one?
Ozempic is one of them, and Jardiance is another one.
I think it might have been Ozempic. Anyway, it's $1,000 a shot, right? Now it's coming down a little bit because there's a couple of competitors. But she said that at $5 they could make money. Well, where in our patent law, unless you grab that by the neck, I don't see. But how do you do it? I mean.
Yeah, and Tom, I'd have to see the analysis, and I don't mean to apologize for the pharmaceutical industry, because I can't stand the pharmaceutical industry. But when she says at $5 they can make a profit, that may be the marginal, but they do have to recover some of the capital investment. They don't need 17 years worth of they shouldn't need 17 years worth of recovering the R&D and the CapEx part of it. A lot of times people get really simple-minded about this, and they're just looking at the marginal production cost. I just want to throw that in there. Maybe they can make money at $10. But whatever it is, it's a much smaller number than what they're charging for it.
But who gets to determine if it's like if you're a monopolist? Oh, I deserve $4 million a year. That's cost. Yeah, but somebody who runs a place the same size as yours is making $300,000 a year. I mean, who is this? These guys. I mean, to me, it's laughable, because one of the things. Well, we are Stacks and Jacks. A few years ago, I would hope that most people that listen to the show are observant. All of a sudden, you noticed that the Viagra and the Cialis ads dropped off TV. In the two biggest places, I think they put them. They were $40 million to the NFL, and I think they were close to that to CNBC, which gives you an idea of how old their clientele is. And all of a sudden, one day they're gone. because after not even 17 years, somehow or another, those guys weaseled a deal where they got an extra 2 years. And I'm going to say their last month of advertising was more than the research was on day one by a factor of two.
Yeah, might have been. And those ads haven't disappeared. They're just different companies now. The people who make the generics are on there all the time.
But those things were $50 a pop, right? Literally. What are the generics?
Yeah, I'm trying to think of the one that is on all the time. Where the guy's saying you just go on the app and you select this and it comes out to, I don't know, something like 50 cents a pill or a dollar a pill, something. You know, it's some very low number, and I can't remember the
name. But
those are
the guys, though, Kevin. I don't know if anybody's ever gone to that site. But that's those Hims guys.
That's one of them. Yeah, that is one of them. But
they're selling you the doctor, too, right?
That's not the one I'm trying to remember.
But they're selling you...
Might be Roe, too, Kevin.
Yeah, whatever it is. There's a different industry that's doing it now, and that's good. That's the way it's supposed to be. But for right now, what are they doing? I don't necessarily want to regulate the cost that the people can charge. I just want to really dramatically shorten the time for patent protection.
Well, I mean, what?
And then go ahead, recover your cost as quickly as you can, because you ain't going to get to do that for 17 years.
But who gets to determine what the fair price is of recovering your cost? What's your cost? I can define cost 100 different ways. I used to be pretty good at this.
Well, yeah, Tom, but that's up to the company. And, you know, yeah, you can, I mean, there's accounting principles that apply, you know, so they can follow GAAP if they want to, you know, their auditors, their public auditors are going to require that, and otherwise, you know, you have a separate set of accounting rules for taxes, and so those are going to be covered. And I'm not saying, hey, look, if they want to gouge for 5 years while they have it, you know, or 3 years or whatever number we settle on, so that they can recover it without the competition. That's the way patent law works. You know, if we could make it all go away 100%, I'd be cool with that. But for right now, if we could just curtail it, because you know it's not going away, if we could just curtail it, that would be a big start in the right direction, because all of that monopoly pricing behavior would disappear quickly. And to me, that would solve some pricing problems.
Well, if you combine, here's the part of the thing that Carl and Hal were writing about. When you combine a patent situation with a health need situation and a third payer on the cost side, you got a bad stew.
Yeah, you definitely do. I'm not arguing with that. So how can you start down the road to getting it under control?
Well, I would say if you were to go in any not that anybody's ever been to a bar, any bar, coffee shop, library, which of course we all are all the time, and just bring up the debate that we should get rid of all the patent laws, nobody would want to get rid of the patent laws. The idea of the three of us hanging around in a garage, popping up something that nobody ever came up with, and not being able to take care of it for a while and say it's our own, everybody would think that was so anti-American it's scary.
Well, actually, you know, capitalism wouldn't have those, but aside from, it would not have patent laws, but okay, I get it, yes, and that's what I'm saying. It is part of the fiber of how we've done business for a long time. The question always is, how long? How long do you get to be protected before anybody can compete with you? Indefinitely? 17 years, 10 years, 6 years, 5 years, what's the reasonable amount? Because now imagine yourself in a business and somebody else has a really cool idea, and you may or may not have been noodling around with it yourself, or you have ways to improve it yourself, and you know, how long before you should get to do that? And if you ask the question that way, you're going to start getting some different answers.
I'm going to have to ask our friend Mike. Did you Did you take that class with me, Father Fitzgerald, on patents and stuff like that, and loot and unions?
No, I don't remember a Father Fitzgerald, Tom.
Well, he was a character. You know,
yeah, you would have had to go to class for those.
Mike
no,
was
no,
there,
Kevin, Mike was there. No.
Actually, you know what? Mike was at... I remember walking to him... We went through the rain a few times. He wasn't always not in class. He was there a lot.
Oh, maybe that was me.
Could have been. You know, I would say the good courses... We were there together, Mike, pretty much.
Yeah, pretty much.
I think
you know, I put so much importance on being in the classroom now, and I often think of how funny some of my college professors would have thought that is, or would think that is now.
Well, you know, Kevin, it's I always, when okay, I'll say it. I did very well in school, and it's funny to me that if you, when you think about it later, like, you know, why did I do well and other people maybe didn't do so hot? I always went to class. What else did I have to do at 10 in the morning? I mean, you know, come on. There were no basketball games around. I couldn't find people to play football with. I had to do something. So I went to class. If you listen to the guy, they would tell you kind of what was important. You took notes. If they told you to read something, you read it that night. It didn't take you that long. We still made it to the basketball court in the bar every night, as far as I recall. And you went through it again the night before the test. Well, you've touched the stuff now three times. And unless you're a dunderhead, my mother used to say, you should pretty much remember it after three times. Well, if you didn't go to class, and then you got somebody else's notes, and maybe they aren't even any good, now you're talking about maybe one time, and then the night before the test, that's not enough. If you did it three times, you remember stuff. I mean, at least, I mean, there's probably people around that one or two times could do it, but if I did it three times, I was pretty good with it. I mean, plus...
I always tell my students, you know, if you show up for every class and you just do the assignments, even if they're not great, you know, even if you're not turning in A work, you're going to have a hard time getting less than a B, because I put graded assignments in every class that we all do as a group. And so, you know, for them, just show up. You know, now I have an interesting student body because I have a very large percentage of people who are eligible for Pell Grants, which means they're eligible for, it means they're below the poverty line, their family income is below the poverty line. So I have a fair amount of that, and I have a lot of students who have families, they have full-time jobs, all of those kinds of things. So, you know, getting them to class is half the battle. Putting graded assignments in class means less homework for them. So it works in a lot of ways. But nevertheless, you know, if they're in class, they're interacting with others, they're listening to what I have to say because I have a lot of experience that I can share, they will get the learning out of it. And that's the important part of my approach to teaching.
Kevin, you guys mostly still use textbooks?
We do have textbooks. They're delivered electronically. People can get it by a hard copy if they want, and we include the textbook in the tuition price.
Because the University of Chicago is a totally different world. I mean, I had a few classes that had a textbook, but very few. Most of you go and you get this big brown envelope with about 30 papers in there written by.
Yeah, I had some graduate classes like that.
And guys would come to class and they, or whether I don't know what they were doing in class, but. The guy would talk, and he'd outline what was important to him, and you immediately could throw 20, maybe 20 to 30 papers out. He's not even mentioning these things. The hell with them. There'll always be somebody sniveling after a test. I read all these papers, and nothing was on the test. He goes, I never talked about it. What'd you read them for? I mean, there's a sort of an art to being a student you pick up along the way, right?
Well, yeah. And, you know, I just want them to learn. You know, I tell the people who work for me that that there are, you know, only three things I want from them. One of them is to love their jobs. So they got to talk to me and tell me what I can do to help them love their jobs. The second thing is our students have to learn, and we can monitor, you know, student success rates, and successful completion of a course is C or better. And then the third thing is can we help them become better professionals? And I have some things that we insert in our classes that, you know, are really for professional development. And if we do those things, we have done a really good job with our students.
Well, to get back, and we've identified, I think, over the various people we've had on the show, that the single biggest spot we have to somehow fix in this country in terms of expenses is the healthcare community. There doesn't seem to be any question that the costs will keep going up, and maybe the care. Well, I don't think there's any doubt that if you have a specific ailment of any kind and you can find the right person, you're way better off than when we were in school, right? I mean, God help, if we didn't want to get sick in the 60s for sure, or 50s or 40s. We weren't in school in the 40s, I get that. But the stuff we're talking about, you know, this is, I guess this is a political shot at both sides. When the Democrats have taken on the healthcare community, they've allowed too many people from the healthcare industry in. They didn't worry too much about costs. They didn't do the job that the three of us would probably have done. I would say that's a fair assessment. Republicans, on the other hand, pretty much just bitch at the Democrats. They really haven't. The undertaking that you're talking about, I mean, one of my friends is just in Northwestern. The undertaking that you're talking about in terms of, and what Audrey was talking about on Monday, they can't wait to get rid of these old doctors because they do business. They actually look at the patient. They spend a little more time. They make the judgments on their own. They don't do everything by computer. They're not happy giving out only one drug that their buddies tell them they have to give out. They can't wait to get rid of those guys. The doctors are no longer the important people in the operation, which is pretty scary. We've got these massive cities that are hospitals, and their overhead is something that's dramatically huge, way above what it ought to be. And you've got concentration issues. You've got drug issues. How in God's name would somebody even start to unravel that? Where would you even start? We're talking about major earthquakes of change that have to happen. And I don't see, I'm not going to blame this on Trump, because I don't think Solomon would take this job on. We know it has to be fixed. We know it's breaking us. I don't see how the hell you even start. Do you guys?
Well, maybe you could start with some of the unnecessary CYA testing that hospitals do because of our litigious society. You know, so that could be one area that there could be some improvements in. But you know,
now, Mike, do you think that is that they run up the costs on tests that maybe they don't think they need because they think they're going to get sued or because they're getting paid for it? I mean, you just made a determination of you're telling their side of the story. Is that even the right story?
I don't know, Tom, but when you go into the hospital, for instance, some of the charges are exorbitant. They're charging you $1 for one aspirin or whatever an aspirin costs. Or, you know, I look at the breakout of our medical costs every time I get a statement from Medicare or TRICARE, whichever one it is. And the total bill under Medicare from a doctor that provides care for either myself or for Gene might be $500. Well, then Medicare is paying them $150. So somehow that doctor is making enough money at $150 to continue to do his profession. But, you know, Medicare is being charged $500. Or no, Medicare isn't being charged. They're only willing to pay $150. So maybe we ought to just pay Medicare prices, vice the on paper cover or the on paper bill of what the healthcare provider is providing. And I'm talking kind of out of both sides. But if the provider can maintain his business at 150 vice 500, then maybe something ought to give there, you know.
Well, I would agree with you. But we have essentially, it's like a list price. Then there's prices that various people get discounts.
Yeah, the retail price, right.
And now you and I, if we went in and just paid for it without any insurance, they're gonna expect a list, right?
Yeah, that's correct.
Well, yep. There's something wrong there, I would say.
Well, maybe, just maybe, the smart move would be to stop putting pharmacy executives in charge of HHS. So as an example, Trump's first round, he had Alex Azar there, who was the president of Eli Lilly and Company, and his first relationship with Eli Lilly, he's an attorney by trade. Not a doctor, yeah, and his first relationship with the company was as their lobbyist. So that's probably not a good choice for a HHS secretary. And so then let's see the next one is Xavier Becerra for Trump. He was actually
that's for Biden you're talking about,
or for Biden, I mean, yeah. And now we're going to get a radical change because he's got Bobby Kennedy up there.
Okay, now with the first time that any that I hope he does, the first time Bobby Kennedy rattles a cage, he's going to get pushed back like there's no tomorrow, because is there anybody in Congress that doesn't have a check from these guys? What's going to happen?
Well, it will be interesting, because Trump is in a position right now where he's a lame duck, and he knows it, and I don't think he cares. I think he's gung-ho on getting everything done before the next election cycle. And if he really wants to make a dent in this, if he's really serious about it, maybe he's not, in which case Kennedy will go nowhere with it. Because, you know, I'm not a Bobby Kennedy fan in just about any political aspect of, you know, any of his political positions, but I am right there with him on making sure that we don't roll anything out unless it has a full test. And you know, all the stuff that he does to beat up on the pharmaceutical industry and to a lesser extent the medical providers, you know, I'm in lockstep with him. So we'll see where he goes on that. But you got to admit, this is going to be a little bit different.
Well, it's going to start being different. The question
is, start out being different. He may just get beaten back, you know, like mercilessly. And I tend to think he won't. You know, he won't stay. If he's not getting any traction, if he's not getting support from his boss, I think he's the kind of guy who's going to say, well, then screw it, I resign.
Well,
and that may be exactly how it turns out. But I'm kind of, you know, ready to make some popcorn and sit back and watch.
It's on a very, very minuscule scale. I was sort of, this other gentleman that ran with me, when we got on the board from the outside at the SIBO, we were the Bobby Kennedys. We were the guys that didn't like the direction the place was going, which of course it ended up going there anyway. And we were going to try and maintain what we thought was the integrity of what the markets should have been like. And it's amazing what would happen if I'm a drug company right now and I'm meeting, and this is going to sound really awful. Trump's got 4 years. Maybe if he starts doing stupid stuff like trying to, you know, having people worried about Greenland and not focused on the stuff he should be focused on. I'm hoping he does focus. I really do. All we have to do is weather 18 months. If we do, we're fine. And it's so friggin' cynical, but if I'm one of those guys, that's just how I'm thinking. Where am I wrong?
Well, I think you're wrong to think Greenland thing is stupid.
Well, what do you think, it's good we should go over there and invade the place?
No. Who said that? Who said we're going to invade it?
He did not rule out military stuff.
Oh, okay. That's just like saying we're invading.
And then they asked the vice president, he goes, we don't have to invade. We already got troops there. We can do it with those guys. That's what his quote the other night. What I'm saying,
when Denmark reaches out to us and says we're ready to negotiate a troop presence there,
we already have a troop.
Well, then maybe raising the topic got some traction.
Well, we're doing the same
and
thing
maybe,
now.
Maybe we really, really want to control some of those Arctic shipping lanes that are becoming more popular.
Let's stay on time.
Rather than ceding it to China for supply chain purposes.
See how easy.
But okay, you can call it stupid.
See how easy we got off topic?
No, Tom, we didn't get off topic. You got off topic.
What I'm saying is, in my opinion, I'm trying to make a case for it. Maybe I'm not doing a very good job. If he stays very focused, he's got 18 months because they're thinking they only have to absorb 18 months and they're home free. Is what I'm taking the other side of it and bringing it back is what I'm trying to do. That's what a trader does. You look at the other side of the coin. What are the healthcare companies? What are these hospitals? If Trump and Bobby Kennedy really want to do something, and I sure as hell hope they do, and I hope Kevin's right. What on the other side? If you're ahead of one of these companies, what is your thinking? I'm saying, if I'm one of those guys, just like they did to me on the board, all we got to do is make it through a year or two. He'll soften up. He'll become one of the guys, and we'll go right on doing what we're doing. And you know what? It pretty much damn near worked. They just outlast you. And these guys only have to outlast them not 4 years. I'm going to say 18 months until the next election cycle starts. I'm lobbing that out there. And I'm saying in order to do that, he has to remain amazingly focused. And I hope he can.
Yeah, and I hope he can too. We'll see.
But I mean,
It's remaining focused is not his MO, but okay.
Well, I hope he does, Kevin. I agree with you. I think the second term through, he's going to do a hell of a lot better job. I'm with you on that. We're not disagreeing.
What he definitely is doing is he's hiring people who will execute on his agenda. At least he believes they will execute on his agenda. Whereas the first time through, he was hiring, first of all, they didn't think they're going to win until like the last month and they started seeing a change in the polls. I don't know if I've said this on the air before, but happen to know the local congressman from the South Bend area. I've known him for a long time through business stuff. And he had been, when Jackie Walorski first ran for Congress, he had been her finance chair. I worked with both his brother and his sister. So, not best buds, but casual acquaintance. And I was talking to him, and he, right before the election, and he said, he's really tapped into Pence's people. And they're all of a sudden saying, we weren't even bothering to think about, putting together a vice president's staff, and now we're scrambling because it looks like we have a shot, which was kind of an interesting thing to get right before the election.
Who do you think was more surprised, him or Clinton?
That's a tough call. That's an interesting call.
But I want you guys...
But the reason I bring that up, and Rudy is now... When Jackie Walorski was killed in the car accident, he ran for her seat, and he's won it, and he won re-election as well. The reason I bring it up is they were stuck with the party people saying, well, you take this guy, because they didn't know. And I think Trump has spent the last 4 years saying, kind of figuring out who the people he wants around him are. Because I don't think he's going to have a lot of tolerance for the people who will work for their own purposes and not his.
Well, all right, we've mentioned a bunch of stuff here. It's pretty heavy crap. What do you think?
Nothing like heavy crap.
But what's the time frame on materially changing the patent laws as it in regards to medicine and other things? I mean, I would make the argument, and I would get nowhere if you drop me into... put me in the Oval Office for 30 years, I would get nowhere saying we're way better off without patents. I honestly believe that. Between the amount that are stolen, between the amount that people have zillions of them on their inventory that they bought from other people, and the second you or Mike invent something, they spring out at you and say, we got one close enough, you can't do it. The amount of crap that goes on in the patent, we're way better off without them. Virtually everything that we know of is the major patents have been stolen, right? I don't think Alexander Graham Bell invented the phone. I know Kodak didn't invent the Instamatic camera. They stole it from Brownie, right? I mean, you go right down the line. But how am I going to do that in 18 months?
You're not. So you can make material progress in a lot of areas in 18 months, and if it's considered a successful presidency. And I don't know if it's gonna, because I don't, as we talk about all the time, there's a lot of stuff in the economy now that's not going to be good. And if we see a big inflation spike next month, well, Trump probably won't be blamed for that. But if we see one in May or June, Instead, he's going to shoulder all of the blame for it, and that ain't going to be good for his administration's success. So looking at it like that, let's just assume for a minute that it will be a successful administration, that people will be happy with what's going on. Then that would put probably Vance in line to succeed. I don't know who else, you know, maybe DeSantis, but I'm not the biggest fan there, so, you know, I have a hard time getting enthusiastic about it. Maybe J.D. Vance, and then maybe you would see a continuation of policy that could continue to charge ahead. Well, but Mike, that's assuming that we're actually seeing a wave of a different political mindset amongst people in general. Now, I think I don't think that the political mindset has changed from liberal to moderate into conservative. What I do think the change in the political mindset is a lot of the stuff that makes no sense whatsoever, that common sense is at least making a little bit of a resurgence.
Well, okay, let's cover one more thing here real quick, because, you know, talk more on Friday. Mike brought up the thing that we've been writing back and forth about all week. He gets a bill. It says it's $500, and Medicare pays $150. And Biden has been, he's been talking about getting more people on Medicare and getting prescription drug prices down for people on Medicare.
And deferred for the election. He deferred the price increase.
I'm saying I'm not a fan of this. And every time he said it, I go, "What about everybody else? Why there ought to be one friggin' price? Duh, it is everywhere else. When you go buy a hamburger."
Oh, come on, Tom. You want to follow antitrust law? What the hell is?
I know. I mean, does anybody even know what antitrust law is anymore? If you ask somebody 35 years old, they have any idea what it even is? If you mention the Sherman Act or the Clayton Act,
take business law from me, and you do.
I'm saying, now, okay, Mike brought that up. Now, we've had, I think, from what, actually Robert, when he was on the show a couple times with us, and he thinks, we've had a couple of Supreme Court decisions that essentially said you can't do that to the medical industry, right? Or actually, what they said was, and I'm trying to be critical here, what they said was, on the buy side, how's that for a term, that insurance companies can share data in terms of, like, for your auto insurance and things like that, or for your medical history, they can sort of share that data when it comes to pricing you for your insurance, be it auto or medical or something. They never once said they could collude on the other side with the hospitals and stuff and have different prices at different places and have a network. And twice they essentially struck that down. I mean, you know, Carl and other the actual times. They paid no attention to everybody. So how in 18 months, which is, I think, the time Trump really has, how the hell, Mike, does that thing become one number where it's $200 and everybody pays it and everybody can see it? I don't see that. I don't know how you'd start that ball rolling quickly. It's as bad as the patent laws, for God's sake. They're just not going to do it.
Well, maybe they'll try. Maybe Doge will, or, you know, who knows? I mean, I know you've said that Musk is the, you know, the new prime minister or whatever, and I really disagree with that. But
tell me what he is before you tell me what he is.
Well, he's an unelected official, so I'm not sure. What was Valerie Jarrett in the Obama administration? Was she the prime minister? I don't know.
Well,
she was.
Well, I'm pretty sure that everybody was worried about Trump being a dictator, so I'm pretty sure he did not turn over his dictatorship to Elon Musk.
Well, no, I would agree with that.
What I'm saying is he going to have a staff? I don't know. Put him somewhere, but just tell me what he's going to do. Is he going to have a staff in the White House? Is he going to have to? He's not going to do this himself. Does he need a staff of 50 to go tell everybody else they got too many people?
Well, he probably will have a staff. You're probably exactly right. And they'll be in some abandoned federal building in D.C., and maybe they'll actually work to make some efficiencies, whether it's the medical profession, whether it's cutting people in the government. You know, do we need the Department of Education, for instance, when we have state and local boards for education?
You know, he's being sued by the SEC as of yesterday.
Yeah, I know, and that's probably a political move because Biden probably still has people in the SEC.
Okay,
so.
But if it's
It'll be just like the first Trump administration, where the lackeys from the Democrats go after people.
But this is,
and now I'm talking politics, and I don't want.
No. Wait, stop for a second. That is, I've been in the business a really long time. That's been a rule that I heard Warren Buffett sometimes doesn't follow it. Everybody in the business since I started follows that rule. That the minute you buy 5% of a stock, you tell people you're doing it, you tell them what your intentions are. I don't think Elon Musk thinks any rule is applies to him. I mean, I hope I'm wrong, but he would tell people...
Any rule apply to the Biden White House they covered up that...
I'm just saying, Mike, this is an area that I'm pretty familiar with. You don't buy...
Tom, but the reason why Biden or Kamala Harris aren't president today is because they lied to the American people continuously for 4 years.
All right, I guess what I'm saying here is, I think you guys get that what you're just saying right now, what about somebody else, is essentially what you and I would say to our mother when she told us to be home with the streetlights on. Somebody else gets to say, it's not about Biden. This is a very simple law. If you buy more than 5% of the stock in the open, you got to tell people what you're doing. That this is easy.
Yeah, here's the problem with it, Tom, is selective enforcement, selective prosecution.
I don't know of anybody.
I am in favor of prosecuting every damn person that does it.
Kevin, this is not what we do. This isn't selective. You know how much stock is outstanding. You buy more than 5%, you're guilty. I mean, what? This is the simplest thing on earth. Why does he figure that it doesn't apply to him?
I have no idea, Tom. I don't know the case. I saw bureaucrats in the government go after or slow roll Trump. And what'll happen is
I don't like that at all either. I mean,
they'll slow roll Trump again, just what your 18 months or 2 years, and then when the Democrats get the House, if they can ever get their act together, which I hope they do, but you know they can't get past the identity politics.
I would hope that in the next couple of years, we as a group can zero in on the opposition here. Is not the Democrats. It's the pharmaceutical industry. It's these world places that don't think that they have to follow anybody's laws.
Yeah, and I'm with you there, Tom. And when we go back and say, what can we do? If we actually had a Justice Department that would file it, you don't even have to make enough traction over a couple of years or 18 months or whatever time frame you want to put on it to actually get somewhere with it, but start the lawsuit against the industry for antitrust violations, because the courts can't do that. The courts can only hear the cases, and they'll drag it out forever. But damn, get started.
What do you make of my idea? I gave the example the other day, if you guys were listening, about the city. The city is so totally out of control here. I don't know that you. I think you need a speech. You know, like a Roosevelt speech, or maybe over the radio on a Saturday morning, and said, look, all this stuff's been going on. We're going to stop it. In the city, I gave the example. You know what? Everybody has their windows tinted too dark. We know what the law is. You got 3 months to fix it. After that, we're pulling people over for it. I mean, I think if... I would like to see, and who knows if these people would ever listen, but this is a little bit of my Southside Catholic upbringing, which I'm, you guys from the South Side, but it's you're pretty much right with me in this trap. I was Trump. I would like to get out on a Saturday morning and say, look, we've got this issue in the medical stuff. You guys are charging incredibly too much. And oh, by the way, you've got all these different prices. We've got these two Supreme Court decisions. I'm giving you 6 months to fix it. If not, if you can walk out of the boardroom in a bracelet, that's your problem, not mine. I think you need to define what it is you see as the problem, and you have to tell people and say, I mean, Mike's idea is right. I don't want to start out day one lobbing lawsuits at people. I'd rather they just stop. I mean, because I don't think we can enforce all the crap that people are doing going after
the lawsuits are going to drag out for so many years, it's not going to be effective.
I know. I'm saying I think you just
talked earlier about outlasting people. So
yeah, I think that you got to just say this is what we're supposed to be doing. This is what we are doing. We obviously can't keep doing it because we're friggin' broke. You better get back to A, or we're coming after you. And maybe you might get somebody to actually cooperate. And what's done is done. What's in the past, leave it. I mean, that would be the deal I'd make. Is that too stupid or what?
No, I don't think it's stupid at all. I do think Russell's going to be kind of pissed that he has to fix the tinted windows on his car. But
I know. Plus, he's got that. He put that real noisy thing in. By the way, is there a place? Is it Mike Murphy's Make Your Car Noisy Shop? What do you have to? They don't sell them like that, do they?
No, you cut the muffler off of it, and then you add hydraulic shocks on the front to get the bouncy thing that I like to do on Friday and Saturday nights.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. You go low and slow, and then get it bounces. Yeah.
Oh yeah, and you would not believe how in sync I've got, you know, my deep bass with the lighting system up under the whole car.
Did you guys see the new? Is it the Modelo commercial?
Boom.
Is that scary or what?
I've got that music in my mind because I went to an NBA game last night.
Oh, God. You know, the commercial where they have the car show, the Hispanic car show, and it's in the culture. They've got the cars where the three wheels can go up and leave the one on the ground. Some of that stuff is wild. I mean, it's pretty inventive.
It does.
Oh,
it is.
I
can barely change oil.
Roadworthy.
Yeah.
Well, Mike and Kevin, good stuff. I mean, let's all hope we go this way, but boy, I don't think they have much time. You know what? I'd love to help.
You know, I don't want to totally go down the topic, but what I keep thinking listening to you guys is how long did it take Obama to get Obamacare through? Was he able? I don't remember. But that's the kind of major thing that Trump's trying to do.
Yeah. You
know, just in general, at a level. You know what I mean?
And I think it took him about 2 years.
Because they had to do it with reconciliation. And in the first 2 years, he had a veto-proof majority. So he had, you know, 60 or 61 in the Senate, and he had the House. So they could have gotten it done. It's the same thing. He promised, you know, when he came in, he was promising in the campaign immediately to do immigration reform. And he had a veto-proof majority and never did it.
Quick question: when I think that Russell, that was a two-part question. How quickly did the bill get passed? How quickly did all the regs and all the other bull crap get done to where it actually came out? It had been another couple of years, didn't it?
Well, at least a year and probably longer.
So it was a long time.
Yeah, you guys just keep talking about, you know, he wants to do major things regardless of what it is, and he's only got 4 years. You know, if I was preparing for a debate, I would have looked up the timeline behind Obamacare getting passed, implemented, disputed, and all that other kind of crap. If you listen to Trump, he's thinking about doing like 10 Obamacares, so he needs to pick his battle and figure out which one or two he'd like to actually get done. And by the time he figures that one out, the timeline's going to run out on him.
Russell, while these two gentlemen are still here, do you agree with my very cynical assessment that if you're the drug companies, all you got to do is weather 18 months and you're okay?
You could say the same thing about the Democrats and anybody else that opposes Trump. That's their goal now.
Yeah, and to run
it out, and I think Biden's doing some things that are a bit obstructionist that are going to eat into that time frame.
One
comment on that. I do think he picked a pretty good candidate or a pretty good vice president, and I think they really need to make Vance a visible part of the administration, because if you do want to do some things that have longer lasting life, then you better be able to say how you're going to have that spill over into the next administration. If that's J.D. Vance, then at least you have a face out there that says we can keep
you
going.
You think Trump's capable of sharing the dais?
Well, what didn't we just say Elon Musk is, you know, very visible? Is he sharing it with Elon?
I might be giving that a 4 month time frame.
Be absolutely right, Tom. He could irritate him just like, you know, Mattingly did and John Kelly, and you know, whether it's retired general officers or whether it's, you know, senior executives, Trump's patience wears thin very quickly.
Well, yes, he did have some people who were with him the whole way.
That's so correct, Kevin. You're right.
He had some of those too, and some of them were pretty visible. I'm blanking on the name. The doctor who he had at HHS.
Ben Carson.
Ben Carson is an example.
He was pretty good. So, I liked him.
Yeah, and a lot of this is, you know, are you on board with the agenda or not? And
well, you're
Trump at round one was very impulsive about who he hired. He'd get impressed with people very quickly. He'd bring them on board, and then he'd find out, you know, a month later that no, they weren't really with him, and then he'd fire them. I am kind of hoping that he has spent a lot of his time over the last several years figuring out who the people. And again, you can hate the agenda or like the agenda, but he's got to have people who are on board with his agenda and will execute on it.
Whatever he thinks the agenda is.
Go behind his back and not execute on it.
Whatever he thinks the agenda might be, the agenda is the budget, medical care, and other stuff. It's right there in front of him. I don't care what you think.
And the border. And I think he's, you know, I think he's totally in lockstep with Holman.
Well, don't forget, for you guys, we really boot you guys. Don't forget Rudy Giuliani. We had probably the best police chief that ever lived. He did the broken windows theory, and when he got on TV too much, Giuliani fired him because he was taking his shots on TV, right?
Yeah, I don't know.
Was that Carrick?
I think it was either Carrick or Bratton, one of the two.
Yeah, when he came out and said something like these were my ideas, you couldn't wait to get rid of them.
Well, you know, okay, so the guy's a crappy politician, too. We could do a whole communication section on this another time. Hey, Mike, you should come back in Friday and we can talk football.
Yeah, I want to talk sports on Friday, right? Okay, all right, gang. I'll leave you. I got to get
Hey, going well, you know, well, I got, I one. Let's lead into Friday just for a second, if you got 30 seconds. If the NCAA, for the first time in her life, Kevin and I have been going back and forth on this, decide to be preemptive, like way too late, and say everybody gets a fifth year, does that mean all kinds of people that have played their 4 years that are sitting around in grad school and stuff get to show up at football practice tomorrow and say, here I am?
I'd say so, and I thought they did extend it to 5 years already.
I'm not talking about the COVID. I'm talking about five total, I mean, just giving you a fifth.
No, I think they already did that, Tom. I'm pretty sure
I don't think they passed it.
They're floating the idea then?
Yeah, I sent it around to you guys last week. It's under discussion, whatever the hell that means.
Okay, well, they will probably do it because, you know, they're already the minor leagues for pro football. Now maybe they'll be an alternative to pro football. So who knows?
Well, it means that if people do the one-and-done senior quarterback, they get them from 2 years now, right?
Yes, but what's the rule on, you know, are they going for a degree or not? You know, I don't know whether Hartman ever got any kind of degree from Notre Dame.
And that's a Russell question. How can you tell if somebody's doing progress on the graduate side?
Well, the NCAA actually has specific academic progress rules.
For undergrad.
No, they apply to everybody.
I know, but if somebody's in the PhD economics program in Indiana and he's writing a paper for the semester, how do you know what he never has to go to class? How do you know what he's doing?
He's working on his dissertation, and they're when you're working on your dissertation, there are things beyond going away and working on a paper that you have to do.
We won't go into how long it took you.
Do what?
We won't go into how long it took you. you could have a pro football career in there.
I could probably cut him.
Anyway, thank you guys, Russell. We got these numbers coming out in a bit, and we'll be all over them, of course, as best mm-hmm. we can. What do you answer me this? Why some months the PPI ahead of the CPI, and the next month it's the other way around?
I don't know. I was working on some calendar stuff, and actually, what I was trying to figure out was if the one that goes first is more volatile than the one that goes second. And like you just mentioned, they do flip-flop when one gets released versus when the other one gets released.
But it's not every other month.
I have no idea. I mean, I'm sure traders would love it if, you know, CPI was always on a Tuesday and PPI were always on a Wednesday, but for some reason they tend to flip spots. And I don't know if one of them, you know, if one department that's calculating stuff puts out a calendar and then the other one's like, well, we can't have it come out on the same day and has to come. I really do not know why they have different days.
If I had to guess, it'd be like a third.
I mean, it'd be great if, you know, everybody loves the employment number because it's the first Friday of every month. You know, we just know that. So it'd be great if it were like the second Tuesday and second Wednesday of every month. But traders don't have any input as to when those numbers come out.
But it's not like they're alternating. I think it's seeming like
It's goofy. I know exactly what you're saying. I wrote up a little piece on how the markets react around CPI and PPI over the weekend, and that involved compiling reaction data, and I couldn't find any rhyme or reason as to why one goes first sometimes and the other one goes first. And I went back about 5 years trying to figure it out. So I've done work on it. I tried to figure it out. I got no idea.
Maybe
this is something that Trump could fix.
Well, I've never. can you? I can never get a whole hell of a lot. I can tell where the CPI in my mind is lying. I mean, it's in the medical area and it's in the house area. But I don't, and it's in the medical insurance area and that kind of thing. But I never could make a whole lot of sense out of the PPI.
And the stock market doesn't give PPI nearly the love that it gives the CPI. And I think that part of that has to do with you know, actual business activity on the corporate end of things versus people running around and spending money. And on the business end of things, that you know, that number did come in a little bit light yesterday. That could be an indication of a lack of demand from businesses right now. It could be more of an indication of a slowing than inflation being under control. And when we get CPI, if you get an inline or higher number, the stock market is not going to like that today, because I don't think that's what we're anticipating.
I think I asked you last week stuff like you can make medical stuff 6% of the economy when it's 20, and you can probably hang on to that. I'll use falsehood for 20 years. I don't see how you say that rents are up 10% when they're up 20 for a period of time. Eventually, don't you have to catch up? I mean, because that's a different. You can't be sitting there thinking rents are $1,000 a month when they're $1,500 forever. At some point, you gotta creep it up, don't you? Even if I think it's harder to give misinformation that way. So the last few months, I think rents have actually gone up through the CPI. I don't know if they're going up anymore. I think they went up a real lot and they didn't catch them. I'm thinking now there's like a little trail coming through there. Or can you keep it going forever?
You can't keep it going forever. And I do think they make an adjustment on the CPI every couple of years, and part of it's trying to rectify what you're talking about, but I don't think it ever goes far enough.
The Colonial Pipeline might have a spill now. He's closed down. You see that in the news?
No,
that's not good.
I did not. No, that's not. Those kind of things, you know, those kind of things happening. Just the infrastructure of the company of the country starting to fall apart. That's one of the few things that I really get upset with government about.
Hey, here's something for you. We just talked about it, about, you know, people making progress toward a degree. The guy who played quarterback for Notre Dame last year, Hartman, who got the big money from Under Armour. Just checked. This is from Kevin. Hartman was a non-degree-seeking student majoring in communications with a minor in journalism. He took classes but was not on track for a graduate degree. What the hell does that mean?
He was taking undergraduate classes.
Graduate.
Yeah, but he's a graduate student, but that means he was taking undergraduate classes. I really think that's what that means.
So how can you track somebody's progress doing that?
You know, well, what you, I mean, if he, what you can claim is that one of the things with the graduate transfer, and I assume it doesn't work this way anymore, but the graduate transfer, you used to have to find a degree that you couldn't get at the previous school. And you know, and that's why you needed to transfer to do graduate work in it. And I think the some of the graduate work was extremely obscure, but odds are they picked some area that he couldn't do it at his previous school or another school. And this is somebody that transferred, right?
Yeah, I got to believe that IU has something in journalism. You don't have to go somewhere else to get journalism.
Yeah. I mean, I'm sure it was some sort of niche like that. But when you do graduate school, and if you're changing what you're doing, sometimes there's some prerequisites involved in it, and you could just say that he was taking the prerequisites.
Ah, okay. All right, we're going to go to break here early. So
I just know because one of the graduate degrees I did, I had to take an undergrad class first.
All right. So, we're going to go to break here early. But what do you make of the monthly Treasury statement came out yesterday, and it's still. It shows a 40% bigger deficit than last year. Now, it's only 3 months, but then again, it's a quarter.
Yeah.
And then we're still behind on both corporate and individual receipts. What does that tell you?
That tells things are kind of slow.
Yeah.
Things are slower out there than people realize.
The question is how much.
And we're bumping up against a situation where we're not going to be able to... we're really not going to be able to cut rates to do anything about it because inflation's still lurking around.
That's the, when I come back, remind me, even when we're going to talk about the CPI, I was digging around the other day, and our current money supply growth the last month is 6.7% annualized. European Union is 9.9. So it doesn't surprise me at all that the dollar is 3% stronger than the euro in the last 3 months. Why is that such an obscure concept? We only talk about it on the show, it seems like.
Because there's two steps involved in that, and people don't like two-step concepts.
Well, if we pour...
That involves thinking.
Oh, God. We're going to go to break, so we come back. We'll have the CPI number. S&P Futures up 21, NASDAQ Futures up 75. Andrew, throw us a quick break. We'll come back. We'll catch these numbers.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. I think most of you know that I'm also the Chief Investment Officer at PTI Securities and Futures. There we invest for and help a wide variety of clients, and you know what? No two are the same. Some have legacy stocks, some concentration issues, some maybe embedded tax issues. The others might need or want some portfolio protection. There could be estate issues or maybe new family members. The point is that we are all unique and the portfolios should match. However, the last several years have seen a relatively one-way market. It seemed that all we needed was to be all in. No protection, no fixed income, just be all in, no matter who you are, what your risk profile or age. Most management firms love that. Take this and like it, no matter who you are. Be careful with that. You are not everybody. I think most see the market view going forward as maybe different than the one looking back, so your portfolio should reflect that. Maybe it's just as simple as your life station has changed. Towards that end, we are accepting some new clients needing a more personal approach and are interested in negotiating the future and not with a portfolio designed for the past. Find me at 312-663-4310. That's 312-663-4310.
Stocks, jocks,
stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Howe, Andrew on the board. We're going to blow through this real quick because these numbers are all going to change in like 2 minutes. S&P futures are up 22, NASDAQ up 80. These things are going to fly one way or the other as soon as the CPI thing comes out. So, like I said, we have individual stocks. Goldman Sachs up 11. We had pretty good earnings. JP Morgan's up 53 cents, even though they had good earnings. So, banking guys seem to come out of the gate here fairly strong. We're not even worried about the stocks overseas. We got oil. She has been rallying. My machine is a tad slow. Oil's up 58 cents, 78.08. Again, we're going to ask Russell if that's broken out of their old range. It sure as hell looks like it is, as we're trying to do more sanctions on Russia and whatever. We've got gold is up 28 bucks, so that's a lot. Andrew, why don't you do the rest, and then we'll come back and do these other. Actually, gold's over 2,700, 2,707. So give us a quick traffic, weather, sports, and we'll get back and check this number out.
All right, it is 7:30 here in Chicago on January 15th.
Just a quick sports here. Both the Suns and the Bulls lost last night. That's just it for basketball.
The Bulls suck. You can't even watch them.
Yeah, not much. How much going on for Chicago in general, I feel like, this season?
No.
But over to Chicago weather, it is, I guess, not looking much brighter either. We are currently in the single digits. We're at 5 degrees right now. It's going to warm up a little bit throughout the day, up to 22, but it's still going to be partly cloudy, not too much sun here and there. Breeze is going to kick in the afternoon. Over in Phoenix, they're also looking pretty cold today, but they're currently at 38 degrees, but they're going to warm up to about 73, and they're going to have, it looks like, pretty clear skies. Finally, for Chicago traffic, inbound expressways are looking a bit more crowded than the usual, but thankfully only one accident to report. That is on the Kennedy. It is heading east right before Illinois 64 North Avenue. Expect delays up to 30 minutes. That is all I got. Back to you, Chief.
For some reason, we have a... I'm looking at these numbers. The number, the headline number month to month, is 0.4%, which is higher than people expected. But the futures are rallying. They're up 63 points. NASDAQ up 270. Not so sure why that is. But, Russell, what... The unadjusted percent change is zero, and the adjusted percent change is 0.4. Why do you need an adjustment in your CPI?
Seasonality around... I'll give you a prime example. The cost of filling up your tank in May, which is generally higher than other times of the year because we're getting into the summer driving season, or through May and June. Don't hold me to that month. I'm just trying to give you a high level example. But things like that, where certain things cost more during certain parts of the year than other times of the year.
The so-called core rate is 0.2 versus 0.3, yeah. So that's sort of what we're celebrating.
I think that's what that's the subcomponent of all this that they're excited about.
I think.
But
we're gonna
and then the other thing is that we've got that I'm looking at CPI at 2.9%. Which I think that 3% number was a big was kind of a big psychological number. Everybody was hoping we would get under.
But what is? It's amazing. I hate like how they use the term brainwashed, but. I guess I will. How is it that, you know, I've been doing this for a long time on the CPI stuff and your money supply stuff. If you look at your CPI and last month it was 1% and the month before was 1%, why do I even care what it was 11 months ago? I mean, it's the current times 12 is where we're at, right? I mean, maybe you could be a little smarter and say, let's take the last 2 months times 6. Why would anybody care what it was a year ago?
Yeah, I really don't think you do. I look at the monthly number.
Yeah, I mean,
I really do look at the monthly number much more so than. And then also, you know, there is a compounding factor that should come into play. It's not going to be make that much of a difference with such small numbers, but you can't just multiply that 0.3 times 6 to say that's what it is, you know, or 0.3 times 12 to say that's what it is, to get the accurate year-over-year number.
Where do you think the adjustment comes in the pantheon of bureaucracy, for lack of a better term? Matter of fact, the gentleman was just on, Mike Murphy, his mom, terrific lady, she gave us Mike, after all. No, his parents are real. Everybody knew everybody's parents in those days. I mean, it was a different world. Anyway, I think Mike had... God, it was him and then like five or six sisters right after him. He said they kept trying for another Mike.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, they really... anyway, beautiful family. His mom did work for the BLS. She gathered...
Oh, wow.
She gathered prices for... I don't know what it was, whether she was rice and noodles, who the hell knows, but she was in the Cleveland area. She gathered stuff when they needed it. And I don't think Mrs. Murphy adjusted any prices. You know, here's the price of rice. I mean, duh. And we're up the chain. I'm looking here like in terms of meats. According to this, the last month meat was down, total column meat was down 0.4%. Now adjusted, it's up 0.3. How many desks down the line do you get before somebody goes, it's not minus 0.4, it's positive 0.3. who's that guy? Why am I? I've never been in one of these huge bureaucracies. I'm just always enthralled about how this happens. The biggest bureaucracy I was ever in, well, the SIBO was, but Pullman was pretty big. And somewhere up the line, somebody makes these adjustments. Who's the guy? I mean, at least I knew it was in Pullman. He was the VP of Finance.
I have no idea who the bureaucrat behind the scenes that is in charge of the Consumer Price Index. It's probably somebody that's been there for a very long time. There is a process behind adjusting that number. They adjusted it. I think they adjusted it every 2 years, and we're in an off year as far as adjustments go.
Well, here's a good one.
Now,
are you a ham guy? Do you like ham?
I do not like ham, no.
All right, well, if you did like ham, it was down 2.5% in a month, and the unadjusted, and somebody changed that to being up 1.4. For God's sake, that's almost a 4% move. What does this guy know about ham that his people didn't tell
him? What's going on with ham?
Yeah, I mean, what the hell?
Yeah, and if you're trading ham futures, you know, you're going to be very upset.
Fish and seafood, up 0.2 unadjusted, up 0.8 adjusted. I mean, this is crazy stuff. I mean, it doesn't make any difference. I know it's not tradable, but why does all this stuff always intrigue me, Russell?
You've got legitimate points here, and the thing is, inflation was not an issue for so long that I don't think anybody was asking these questions of you know, where we're getting the CPI and the PPI from.
Well, there is
we wouldn't be talking about, I mean, we would be talking about it, but not in the same light about how inaccurate it seems to be in this inflationary environment. You know, how I would try to explain this in the classroom. I'd say, well, think about the CPI as a monthly earnings report, and that number is getting massaged every time it's reported, and eventually there's going to be a comeuppance when a company is being less than honest about their numbers. You know, eventually they have to restate things and admit things weren't as good as they were because they were sweeping some things under the rug. And typically that happens when a company has a really bad quarter, you know, and they just can't cover it up anymore. Well, you know, we didn't deal with inflation. You know, I had undergrads 5 years ago before COVID that I would talk about inflation to, and I'd say it's going to happen in your career. I don't know when, but it's going to happen in your career, and you guys need to be aware of this is how things are when we have an inflationary environment. How many people do you think are at the Bureau of Labor Statistics where we get the inflation numbers from? How many people do you think were there the last time we really had true inflation? And they may not, you know, they've been operating for a couple of decades in a very low inflationary environment, where they could pretty much just, you know, arbitrarily decide how they wanted to weight things, and nobody was overly concerned about it because we weren't concerned about inflation.
We'll get a load of this.
So I mean, that we may be actually seeing this catch up with them, because now people are more fixated on this number, and as they get fixated, they're like, I don't spend 6% of my hell. I don't spend 6% of my income on the property taxes, you know, for the house that I live in. That's more than 6% of what I
don't think. I don't think property taxes are even in here.
They're not.
Yeah.
And that's part of the problem. And property tax, because expenses are going up for, you know, what the government spends, they got to get that money from somewhere. And, you know, that's an increased cost of living for a lot of folks as well.
Get a load of this one. We're talking about adjustment. The market's up 83, NASDAQ up 340. Yeah. And I think the reason why, Russell, is this, the traders, which I am, are reading this thing just like I am. Get a load of this energy. Last month, the unadjusted is minus 0.1. The adjusted is positive 2.6. Where's that coming from?
That's a volatile number, period, just because, I mean, you see that when you're an interesting case study, because I believe you get gas every Sunday.
Yeah.
And probably at the same place. So you
I do.
Would kind of remember my little before I got beaten up at the crack McDonald's. Remember when I would always talk about my McDonald's and how much it had gone up from year to year to year got the same breakfast at Loyola. You've got that with it, you know, with energy, because you do the exact same thing once a month. I mean, was it cheaper this past week, past month, or was it
was it
more
in
expensive?
A 3.19 range, which is it was lower a couple
and
weeks
then,
before.
And I'll give you a national adjustment thing. You know, we've got that funny gas where they've got to switch over one of the refineries every year.
A couple of them. They do the one in Whiting and they do the one in them.
And I think that has an impact on the pump cost in Chicago.
Not now, but it will in May or April, whenever it starts.
Yeah, whenever it happens. Yeah. And where I'm going with this is that's the kind of crap that you legitimately need to make an adjustment for.
You know,
you were asking me why. You don't need to make an adjustment because you don't like that number. Yeah, you know, I'm working on a big project right now where we're analyzing a real estate stock for a contest that my students are in, and we basically are throwing out 2020's fundamentals because it's a mall based one, and we're extrapolating what we think a 2020 number would be in normalcy, and that's a legitimate reason to make an adjustment. Because you had a big one-off event that you don't expect to repeat itself, you know, when you're analyzing the stock, you know, if they've been adjusting the CPI and the PPI because they don't like what the numbers look like sometimes, or because they're outlier numbers, and you just mentioned a couple of outlier numbers, a couple of numbers that were negative last month that are positive this month, you know, I feel like some of the adjustments are with the outlier numbers, and if you're suppressing the upside outlier numbers on a consistent basis for 20 years, that stuff catches up with you.
Well,
I wouldn't be surprised if that's the human factor as to what's going on behind the scenes with our inflation indicators, because again, we didn't really have a whole lot of we had more inflation than those numbers were indicating, but it wasn't so bad that it was impacting our day-to-day way of life. And inflation has dramatically impacted our day-to-day. I don't care what your income level is. It's had an impact on your day-to-day life over the past two, three years.
One on the numbers here, and I just want your opinion because none of us do it, so we don't really know the answer. But the other is on, I get this real feeling because, Russell, nobody's dealt with more inflation stuff when they were young than me, because I did this stuff for Pullman for 3 years.
And you were doing it when your how much you charged for something was changing
monthly,
quarterly,
monthly.
I didn't want to.
Yeah, we had an adjustment every month.
Blow bluster on that one, but you've talked about this before, where your input costs are going up, and you had to pass them on somehow.
And the people who had escalation clauses in the stuff that we bought from them, I think did okay, and the people who didn't do so hot. Anybody have a question here? It's talking about utility pipe gas service. All right, and it's got us up 4.9% year over year. Now, my question, and again, your opinion, because you, when I get my gas bill, these bleeps, read gas company executives, have somehow separated out a lot of. Now, does this mean the price of the gas, or does this mean your bill? Because my bill now, there's four people that are in my building, and I of course pay for a couple of them because their stuff goes to the building. I want to make sure it gets paid so we don't get shut off on our hot water and stuff. We pay. We're up to the people's in Chicago has got some bleeped up deal now where you pay so much for the stuff just to come to your door. So in the summertime, I think it's $52 a unit. And in the summertime, I've had 3 or 4 months where I never turned the stove on, where I've had zero gas usage. Mm. Same thing with the girl down in the garden apartment. Zero gas usage. And yet the bill's 50. So if none of us turn the gas on, it's $200 a month, which is kind of a lot. Now, my question is, are those prices in the piped gas number? I don't know if they are or they aren't.
I don't. I mean, I, I, I don't know where they get that local number, you know, where they get it down to the local.
I mean, are they pricing the natural gas?
I would assume they look at, you know, what the BTU and what the usage is over a certain period of time, and,
yeah,
and that's the number that you want. Now, that might be overly simple compared to, you know.
Well, what if Peoples runs the thing through the state legislature and all of a sudden it's 100 hours a month just to be hooked up? Now, does that go in here, or with the pricing?
Do we get a double?
Do we get a double?
Probably not, because that's the hookup fee. That's not the actual, you know, cost of per BTU and usage.
My next question is, I get this feeling, and you guys being the, maybe one of your students is smart enough to define what's mystery going on in my brain here. What makes this inflation a lot different than the stuff in the late 70s? I don't know if it's different, but there it was in commodities. It was everything you could feel and touch. It was in steel. Mm-hmm. It was in everything you could identify. The service component of the economy wasn't near as big, sort of, as it is now. Now the inflation that I see is just burying people. I think by, you know, if you shop sales, if you just say anything, you can still feed people at a reasonable number. You know, not that we don't look at the price of eggs and so forth going up and down, or the price of gas. The thing that absolutely, I think, is burying people is this medical cost that unless you actually have an event, you don't even know it's there. Or the fact that the roof might have doubled in the last 5 years. But if you don't get any new roof, you don't know and you don't care. I was with having a couple of cocktails at my group of judges a couple of weeks ago, and one of the guys is, you know, he's 80-ish. He says, "Tom, you know, he goes, I listen to the show once in a while." He goes, "You talk about this inflation." He goes, "You're spot on, but I can't define it like you." He said, "The other day, last week, I'm in the parking lot, and I back up, and I think I might have nudged this car next to us, but I wasn't sure. I look out, and there's this one." There's no bumper anymore, right, that you can actually nudge without a problem. The bumpers are painted, right, which is kind of makes them useless as a bumper, duh. But that's what we have. He goes, "There's this little scratch. I don't know if I did it or not." So, being the honest man that he was, he waits till the lady comes out, and he goes, "Do me a favor. Would you check your bumper? Do you see anything there that you haven't seen before? Because I don't know if I nubbed you or I didn't, or whether that scratch." And she looked at it and she goes, "Oh, that scratch wasn't there." And I think she was being honest. He goes, "I'll pay for it." He goes, "There was no dent. It was just a scratch. Guess what the number was?"
$900.
$1,500.
They had to replace the whole thing?
I would imagine, or had to paint the whole thing or something. I mean, I don't think anybody is ready for that at all.
No.
I mean...
No.
What did Kenny Polcari say? His wife got rear-ended in the new Lexus or something. Was $25,000 to fix it? He goes, "Didn't even look that bad."
My next-door neighbor just got one yesterday. I'm going to tell him that.
Well, I mean...
I'm sorry.
Well, Audrey's friend, they're driving to Florida. Somebody banged the rear-end of the thing. He goes, "It didn't look that great." They was driving. They drove it all the way to Florida. Went to the insurance company. They totaled it. Said it was going to cost $15,000 to fix. We'll total it.
Oh my gosh!
I mean, there's stuff around that you don't know that if your water heater goes out, it used to be $1,500 and now it's $3,000. This is what's lurking, and that's why I think that's why legitimate people, but it's a horrible thing to say, people who don't ever plan on having a credit card balance, that's why they get a balance.
Mm-hmm.
Some emergency thing happens, and they're like, "What do you mean a transmission's $5,000? I don't have $5,000. It goes on the credit card."
Oh, the Rhodes household experienced this with a flooded basement over the summer.
Oh, God.
Yeah, which that being able to get everybody in here and get things fixed as quickly as possible, it's nice to have a credit card.
Yeah. I mean,
that's one of the things that I feel like that's a legitimate reason to have a credit card.
But now all of a sudden it's
going to take a couple months to pay it off, and it's going to take a couple months for the insurance to send you a check. You know, that's
I don't see
the best alternative of bad alternatives.
But I don't see the administration coming in. And again, he's not my favorite guy, but it doesn't mean he's my president. And I hope he does a good job, and I think he's going to do a better job than the time before. That's my position on the deal. It's okay. And I guess I'll put up with the rest of the stuff I'm going to have to. But I don't see anybody talking about cutting these credit card rates down.
Oh, no. Not at all. This is the guy that I wanted to be. There's not a Bobby Kennedy of the focusing on the financial industry stuff like he is on the healthcare stuff. Trump needs czars for businesses that need fixing, and he probably needs a financial markets czar as well. I applied to work in the Trump White House the first time he got elected. I didn't apply to work in his White House this time around, partially because I took it personally that they didn't call me back at all.
Well, yeah,
I feel like the financial markets need the same sort of revamping that the healthcare does as well. Anything that's overly regulated by the government needs some revamping.
Russell, and why do you think that?
I think our industry and the healthcare industry are the two probably at the top of that list. I think education is high up there as well. I'm talking about at the what the government offers at the, like you said in the first hour, why do we have a Department of Education? And the Department of Education really is nothing more than a political arm of whoever's in charge. Because they withhold your funding if you don't agree to do all the stuff that they want you to do.
Yeah, it's crazy stuff. The thing that you and I, and you know, it's amazing the blend of people we have on the show, because even though obviously we're always arguing with each other, that's why we're all friends, right? You get to argue with friends, and but we're all pushing for the same spot. You know I don't want to brand them with this. But Hal is starting to remind me of Little Milty. He says the exact same thing that Milton Friedman used to say. I don't even think he knows he's doing it, but he does. But why is the competitive marketplace, especially in this world of AI, internet, why is the competitive marketplace not working? If you go to Wells Fargo or Chase, I don't know what you're doing in your savings account, and I don't know how much you're making in your checking account, but I was Southside dentist, you know, I still go back to the roots, get my teeth cleaned, and the lady's telling me, you know, talk about a weird story. When I was a Ute, First National Bank, Evergreen Park, did everything for everybody, right? They had this big place, they had the really good drive-ins, they gave me drive-throughs, not drive-in movies, and they lent me 10 grand right out of, because I bought a Fiat from my stepfather. Boy, what a piece of crap that thing was! And I was like a $1,200 loan, and I paid it off early. And I bought this condo with Robin. And I said I need to borrow 10 grand, and they go okay. And they lent me 10 grand at a decent rate. He goes, you got a good credit rating. Nobody had a cosign or nothing. I paid them off in 4 months. And anyway, they get taken over by was it Old Kent? That was originally owned by Ozinga Brothers. And the second biggest owner was a guy who owned Bleeker's Bowling Alley. The day that it gets taken over, and the guy's richer than God, he has a grabber and dies. Talk about a story. So then, 6 months later, they get taken over by Fifth Third. Well, they shut down the building. Now they tore the building down. I don't think
It's not a dispensary.
No, it's down. They had this,
everything's.
Let me ask you: they had this massive vault downstairs, safety deposit. How do you take a vault out of a place?
I don't think you do.
Now it's like a parking lot.
Have you walked down to the basement of the? Oh, you mean because they destroyed the building?
They destroyed everything.
I mean, you got it. I was just gonna say if you have go down in the basement of the Board of Trade before you head over to Ceres, there's a vault in the basement there still.
Can you rent spots?
No, you can't. And there's actually one of the big bank buildings on LaSalle. They converted their old vault into, because it was this big, into a meeting center that I've actually given presentations in.
Well, anyway, a few of the people who worked there said, screw this, and they went down the block and got this little storefront and became Evergreen Community Bank.
Mm-hmm.
So my mother immediately took all her stuff out of the old bank and she didn't like them and moved down the block. Well, within not very long, I'm talking 15 years ago, Russ, for $1 million, you and I, if we knew somebody how to run one, we could have formed a bank. That's all you needed. Mm-hmm. You know, people give deposits, and you give the deposit to the Fed. You make a little bit, and everybody's happy. Well, the nurse from my dentist says they're right next door to the place. She goes, I have my money there. They're paying 5% on like checkbooks or something, or 4.9. I go, they're doing mm-hmm. what? I mean, a CD? She goes, no, just a regular savings/checking account. Now, in this world, you would think that anybody who had an account somewhere else would say, who are these guys to get their money over there? Mm-hmm. It doesn't happen. Are these people just, are they just so big that people think nobody else is any good? Or why? You would think that these guys.
I think people are, yeah, there's the whole pure academic argument that, you know, we always do everything that's economically in our best interest. And I don't think anybody really does with money. They just kind of, I mean, what you're talking about involves some effort. You know, go out, find the other bank, do, you know, transfer money from one bank to the other. Make sure. It's funny. When interest rates were going up, I got an offer to open up a high yield account that was paying 5%. I did it early last year, and they've dropped it all the way down to 3.8% since I opened that account.
We're still getting.
They suck me, and I think people go through experiences like that where. They switch for a higher rate, and next thing they know, you know, a year later, their rate's right back in line with everybody else.
Well, I mean, you can't be paying more than everybody else forever if you can't get the return on it. But
I think there's a combination of, and then there's just a reputation factor. You know, my 5% was with American Express.
Okay,
so I'm not worried about American Express going out of business. I'd be more concerned about Citigroup going out of business than American Express.
Well, we still, every Monday, my brother for PTI clients, well, mm-hmm. we have two clearing firms. I mean, you know this, but the people mm-hmm. at IB, IB pays a pretty reasonable amount.
You know? They do, yeah.
Now, at RBC doesn't pay as much. They're a bank, duh. So every Monday, my brother goes to the Treasury mm-hmm. for those dudes, and we have all kinds of T-bills for people. I mean, I have a lot of people that are in protected programs and a lot of people. But I mean, the cash balances, we go to the Treasury. We're still, I think we 30 days, we're getting 4.6, 4.8, something like that. And so it's mm-hmm. still, it was over 5 for a while. But I would be remiss. We have finally a drop down in these 10-year and 30-year rates. Is this going to last?
I don't know. That's looking at the interest rate predictor, it looks like they moved the next cut up from September to, I think, July.
Right, I'm looking more at the 10 and yeah. 30, not the.
And that would what's happening in the 10-year would coincide with that.
So you believe these numbers, and you think everything's okay?
I don't ever believe numbers right off the surface.
Why? We only have a minute or two. Why do you think if everything is? We got a new administration coming in. We've got people not wanting to have this inflation go. Why do you think that all of a sudden we're expanding the money supply at a pretty serious rate, and the European Union is doing it at almost 10% a year? What is going on here? Why are they doing that?
Why are they doing?
Why are they all of a sudden pouring money into the system everywhere?
Because things are slowing, and it hadn't shown up in the numbers yet.
But.
I think maybe the tame inflation numbers are a combination of are a combination of slowing economic activity.
Well, if we have, I know it's not kosher in today's world,
mm-hmm.
but if we have a 7% money supply growth and we have zero real growth, doesn't that equal 7% mm-hmm. inflation?
It should. Totally should.
Why is it?
I'm going to tell you, man. You know, I drive down to Indiana twice a week, and we saw the fewest number of trucks on the road in a long time on the drive down yesterday. And I always feel like trucking activity and rail car activity are going to give you an idea as to what's really going on with the economy, because if people aren't moving stuff around, maybe things aren't as strong as everybody expects.
You know, when people used to get Business Week, mm-hmm. inside the front page, there was always rail car loadings. Does people still look at that statistic? Where do you get that statistic?
You can get that number. You can get it from BNSF, And Buffett looks at that number every week.
That's everybody.
That's the one he owns. Well, it's there, but BNSF is such a large one that I think it'd be kind of like saying that, you know, GM's car sales are going to give you an idea as to what, you know, the global auto sales are. So I think it'd be a good number to work with.
All right. So when are we getting one of the young ladies back in?
I don't know. I started teaching undergrad derivatives yesterday. So I'll find a couple of worthwhile students.
You swore you were never doing undergrad again.
I you know what? This is actually something I chose to do. I'm trying to teach derivatives more as a conceptual class than a math class.
All right. Well, that's cool. I bet that's fun.
Yeah, no, we're just trying. I'm trying to. I divided the semester up into thirds, futures and some of the forward and swap stuff. First third, options second third, and then the third one is everybody has a paper trading account through Interactive Brokers, and we show up and I give you scenarios, and they actually put trades on.
Wow,
that's going to be the last part.
Did you listen yesterday to Professor Hal? He's actually going to teach a two-quarter course in the history of economic thought. He's all psyched up.
Where is he teaching it?
Whatever. You know, he teaches like two or three schools somewhere in Carolina, I think.
Okay.
But, I got to dig out all my notes on that. That was one of the best classes I ever took. It was two quarters, the University of Chicago.
Oh, I think that would be fascinating.
Yeah, boy, I'd love to. Absolutely. I don't know if I want to drive to California or Carolina and listen in, but it's all online. How can I wing stuff at him if it's online?
You can't.
Well, that sucks.
You can do what when COVID hit, you can do what the kid from Hinsdale South did during a Hinsdale online class and moon everybody.
Oh God, I don't even want to go into what people used to do.
That's a classic. They caught the poor kid too. I was disappointed.
Well, hey, well, say hello to everybody, and we'll talk next week. And we're still up. We're up 90, and we're up 367.
I know. They love it.
We could be up on the week here. We'll see. Be back tomorrow, Stocks and Jacks.
That's all, folks.